Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning. Welcome to Talkback Gardening around our beautiful state of South Australia and in Broken Hill. It is plant propagation time, John Lamb.
Good morning, Deb. Yes, it's a wonderful time for taking cuttings. The question, of course, is how do you get the cuttings that you take at this time of the year to grow little roots because of that hot weather that keeps on coming along and destroying them? We'll explore that very, very shortly with Matt Coulter.
We certainly will, and there's nothing Matt doesn't know about plant propagation, so if you've got a question for him, now is the time to call through 1300 222 891. I have a couple of amazing prize packs to give away today. Our topic is fruit fly, so if you'd like to do a little bit of research, please do so. We have an organic ABC Organic Gardener brand new magazine, gardener's diary and calendar times two. So we'll be asking you some fruit fly questions sometime in this hour. We'll have one competition by phone and one competition by text message. So do a bit of research on fruit fly and definitely be a part of it. But right now it's all about plant propagation.
Matt Coulter is head of propagation at the Adelaide Botanic Gardens, and at this time of the year he's propagating plants not by the hundreds, probably by the tens of hundreds. Good morning to you, Matt Coulter.
Good morning, John. How are you?
So, you grow so many plants right throughout the year for the three botanic gardens. We come along at this time of the year and we're confronted with 40 degrees, and sometimes it's 40 degrees not today but tomorrow and the day after. How has the botanic gardens plants that you've propagated, how have they survived during that hot, hot weather?
I must say it has been a bit of a struggle, John, with this really hot weather. But
well, it's nice to know.
With constant care and watering, we've been able to get most things through without any losses, but it has been a lot of work to keep things going. But, we've done quite well.
So you're saying the issue is water, or the solution is water?
Definitely, John. I mean, sometimes you might even have to water the one plant four or five times just to get the water through, particularly when we're talking about pots. If you just water it once and all the water just flows through, some plants you know, may have to water four or five times just to get that root ball saturated so it can actually sustain those really hot weather.
So you have access to all the latest misters and foggers and nice little warm beds that you put the cuttings on. Home gardeners don't. How can home gardeners that love propagating their plants at this time of the year meet the challenge of the hot weather and not have their cuttings just starting to look good and along comes the hot weather, destroys them? What can they do?
So the most important thing, John, is to keep the humidity at a good level. So greatest losses will happen when those leaves dry off from the cuttings that you've taken. So if you don't keep your humidity up, those leaves will just go. And what we're trying to do is keep those leaves alive until the first roots form, so then the water can be taken up through the root system. Most of the problem with propagation is people actually water the cuttings when they have no roots and then rot happens. So we tend to lose more plants from overwatering than underwatering.
So let's take a look at the fact that we might have five or six small containers and they've got two or three cuttings in each little container. How would you look after them so that they get enough water but not too much water?
So the main thing when you take cuttings is actually the more cuttings you put closer together, the better it is because they create their own little micro environment.
That effect. So yeah. You've got a small container, let's say it might be, say, 4 or 5 centimetres across. Would that be too big?
No, we probably, as a minimum, we'd put at least 10 cuttings in something that size.
Would
but
you?
With smaller leaves, we can even go up to 20 to 30 cuttings. So you find that the closer the cuttings are together, the greater the humidity is created. Rather than if you just put one cutting versus 20, you'll find that one cutting probably will do worse than the 20 together because they're creating their own little microenvironment.
So there's 10 or 15 or 20 cuttings in a small container. In a container by itself, it's exposed to the environment. So describe the kind of environment that is required to keep it moist and also humid, the word you were talking about before.
So what we're trying to do is keep moisture on the leaves. So if you have like a little atomizer or a little nozzle on your hose, you can just spray those that lightly on the leaves. So what we're trying to do is keep moisture on that leaf, and that will actually create its own humidity. We need to water the potting, the propagation media from time to time. We want to keep that dry. The thing I always say is you can always add more water, but once it's wet, you can't actually take that water back out, and that's when you have the greatest loss.
So true. But, okay, you've got, a misting system on your little wand or a little bottle. But if you have to do that three or four times a day or maybe even more, how often would you mist them?
Yeah, and one of those like 40-degree days, I would be trying to do it at least four times a day.
Right.
But if you don't have the time to do that, you can actually sit your little pot in a tray of moisture that actually can the water vapour then can move up into the cuttings as well. So in a really hot day, it's probably not a bad idea just to have your pot sitting in the water, but I wouldn't have that all the time because then, your media can get too wet.
Okay.
But just on those really hot days, it is not a bad thing to do.
Yes, but just an ordinary little saucer. And so let's say the container might be 5 or 6 centimetres high. How much water would you put round the base? So how much water in the saucer would you have?
So just a small saucer. You just want probably like 1 to 2 centimetres. You don't want like lots of water sitting there. But if you just have like 1 to 2 centimetres of water just there, that will just help with the keeping it cool.
And it just wicks up underneath and keeps the roots cool without overwatering.
That's correct.
And then if you mist them often, and the trick, of course, with misting, I found, is that if you are not careful, if you have big droplets of water, it goes into the root ball and you overwater.
That's correct, John. We've actually, in our nest, we've actually gone to the system of actually using fog, which is actually mist, which actually creates humidity but actually doesn't make the cutting wet. So basically all about droplet size. So we don't actually want large droplets. We want the finest droplets as possible to go onto that leaf.
Isn't that brilliant?
Because you have large droplets, then they actually will go down into the media.
Yes. I've just installed my own little mini glass house and I've got foggers in there. I had misters in there and they were just overwatering, but the foggers are brilliant. But I had to go to a specialist irrigation centre to give you the little outlets. And so if you're a really keen gardener and you can't buy what you want at a garden centre, go along to an irrigation shop. They specialise in irrigation equipment. They've got nozzles of all shapes and sizes.
Yeah, you see lots more places having these fogging systems now because people are starting to understand it. And the beauty of the fogging system, it actually creates humidity, it actually brings the temperature down. So unlike large glass houses, they cool glass houses actually to fog it. Not necessarily for the moisture, but for the humidity control to drop the temperature. So when you're actually fogging your cuttings, you're actually bringing the temperature down as well.
So let's say you have a small courtyard and it's full of ferns and plants which grow in the shade, and you put a fogging system on and you go to work. If you leave a fogging system on all day, would you use a lot of water? What's the output of a fogging system?
So fogging, the beauty of the fogging system actually loses a lot less water than a misting system. And the way that we actually do it, we do it on a humidity sensor. So once it actually reaches a certain humidity, then it will turn off. And then when it drops below another humidity, it'll actually turn on. So the fogging's not staying on constantly, but it's actually just staying on for short periods. And sometimes it might only need to be 30 to 60 seconds. So the amount of water you're actually using is much less than the traditional misting systems.
Yes, we die. I'm going down a rabbit warren. I need to come back. We'll talk about fogging systems on another day, maybe, Matt. Because I think it's got tremendous potential for keen gardeners that like growing their own plants. So we come back when we've got our little cuttings. And I suppose, just describe the cuttings. We're talking about you describe the cuttings which people can take at the moment.
Yes, so this time of year is actually a great time of year to be taking cuttings because the new growth is actually hardened off to a level that is a really good level to be able to be used. If you have really large leaves, what we actually do is reduce those leaves in size to stop the transpiration, and it actually helps you get more cuttings per square metre as well.
Well, let's say you've got a coleus or a begonia. How much of the top growth would you take as a cutting?
So we take about 10 to 15 centimetres and we probably leave, say, 2 to 4 leaves on and then strip the lower leaves off, and then we cut the base to a node, which will help with the rooting as well.
Righto. Why do you take off for the bottom leaves?
So that actually goes into the media. The bulbs get into the media, and then the leaves you live on are above the media.
Sometimes you have plants with great big leaves. The new coleuses have got enormously great big, very attractive leaves, but they're very, very large. And if you have two larger leaves, presumably they dehydrate. So what do you do there?
So we actually reduce those leaves more than by 50%. So we cut the leaves in
half. Cut the leaf in half.
Yeah, so basically all those leaves are there. It's just to help the plant produce the roots. And once the plant reproduces the roots, then that leaf can fall off. But if you actually leave the leaf too large, it'll wilt very quickly, particularly this time of year. But if you actually reduce those really large leaves, then that'll help the new leaves to grow out as well.
You've got a terminal set of leaves, and underneath that there's a set of leaves, and then there's another set of leaves. How many sets of leaves would you leave? Do you leave the tip, and how many sets of leaves underneath that?
Depending on the size of the leaves, but I always say as a minimum two leaves.
Two leaves.
But two to four is ideal, but if you have smaller leaves, obviously you can leave more, but two to four is ideal.
We're talking propagation with Matt Coulter, and he's just a wonderful person to talk to about the plant propagation. We need to also leave time, Deb, for talking about the courses which are coming up. But
that's right. Well, look, at the moment, if you've got a question for Matt Coulter, you better call in now because we've only got Matt for a limited time. Our number is 1-300-222-891. If you have a plant propagation question, something you've been struggling with perhaps, he might be able to give you some specific advice on that. The number again, 1-300-222-891. And just in relation to foggers and misters, had a comment through on the text line saying human beings have them for themselves now, sitting on a patio. So they're not just for plants these days.
Yes. In fact, I've discovered that those systems that you buy for putting around your patio are absolutely ideal for putting around your courtyard plants. It does the same thing, doesn't it, Matt? It just drops the temperature.
Exactly. Even if you go, you even see them in fruit and vegetable shops now too. My local fruit and vegetable shop actually has a fogging system where the veggies are to keep them cool and humid as well to stop them going off.
It's brilliant. You've got fog coming out of the little misters a metre or so above you. By the time it gets down to you, it's gone, but the temperature's dropped.
Exactly.
Yeah, brilliant. We've talked about it's the time of the year to take lots of cuttings, but people are saying, well, what kind of plants can I strike at this time of the year?
So any of the quick propagation plants, things like salvias, plectranthers, coleus, which you've mentioned, fuchsias, impatiens, they will all strike within 2 to 4 weeks. But even I've noticed in the garden, things like camellias, the growth is actually perfect at this stage to take cuttings. So at this time of year, it's a great time because, you know, you're going to get the root system on the plant before the cold weather sets in. If you leave it a little bit too much longer, then it's getting a bit late. But February is actually an excellent month for taking cuttings.
People like to grow Daphne and find it difficult to strike. Good time now?
Fantastic time. That new growth is coming now. So we propagate quite a lot of Daphnes in the nursery. This is an excellent time because all that new growth, that flush after the flowers have taken.
So what we're looking at is the new growth, but it's hardened off so that when you bend it, it doesn't sort of bend, it snaps.
Yeah, so what you want to do, you want to just look at the tip, and if the tip is, if you cut off the plant and the tip wilts straight away, you know it's too soft. But and what you can do, if the tip is too soft, you can actually just take the tip out. But tip cuttings are the ones to go for if it's hardened off, because they're the ones that root the best.
All right. Is it better to have short cuttings or long cuttings?
I'm a big advocate for short cuttings. I know a lot of other people, they take longer cuttings, but my theory is if you take short cuttings, that short cutting will root and overtake the longer cutting anyway. And you can take really, I mean, it's quite amazing how small a cutting you can take.
Yes, that's very important, I think, when you're growing things like a coleus or a begonia. If you've got a great big long cutting, then you end up with something which is gangly, whereas if it's small, it sends out its side branches and it's more compact, isn't it?
Exactly. You're starting from when you're growing plants, you've got to start from the beginning what you think that plant's going to turn into. So if you take a long cutting, you're probably going to need to prune that anyways. But if you take, as you said, if you take a small cutting, it's going to branch easier, quicker, and they're the ones that I go for.
We have got a special guest in the studio, Matt Coulter, head propagator at the Adelaide Botanic Gardens. Getting lots of calls from you now on 1-300-222-891. They've discovered you. We'll come back to Matt in just a moment.
Talk Back Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Our special guest this morning, Matt Coulter, head propagator at the Adelaide Botanic Gardens. If you have a question on propagation, now is the time to call, as Sonia from Blakeview has, in relation to bougainvilleas, Sonia.
Yes, I'd like to know how you go about propagating bougainvilleas. I haven't tried myself. I've inquired a couple other people of gardening and they say they're rather difficult.
Yes, and there's some lovely dwarf bougainvilleas now, which are absolutely ideal. You can put them out in full sun. They don't mind how hot it is.
Oh,
so,
that's
Matt,
what I'd like.
How do you grow them?
So the most important thing with the bougainvillea is to get the right hardness of the wood. Sometimes you see bougainvilleas this time of year, the wood can be really, really soft. They're sort of water shoots. Yes. They're the ones to stay away from.
Right.
So the ones at the moment, you probably see there's quite a lot of ones flowering at the moment, and you can actually take cuttings while they're flowering. You just need to cut the flowers off.
But if
you just take the tip, say, to 10 to 20 centimetres, remove the lower leaves of about 10 centimetres, and if you leave about four leaves on it. But the most important thing is the propagation media. John and I always talk about having good aeration in the media. You want to sort of try and make up your own propagation media if possible. And the media that we use is a perlite coir combination. So it's an 80% perlite. So it's a very aerated mix. So the propagation media is really quite an important process of the plant propagation. So you can take perfect cutting, but if you give it bad propagation media, then you know it's very difficult. So the propagation media is very important, and all the bougainvilleas you see in the shops all propagated by cutting. So they are quite achievable to do.
Are you better off taking a summer cutting or a semi-hardwood cutting, or would you get better success waiting till winter and until they drop their leaves and use it as a hardwood cutting?
No, definitely I would use a semi-hardwood cutting, because really they're an evergreen, but in our environment they're semi-deciduous, but in their natural environment they're really an evergreen plant. So if you actually propagate them while they've got their leaves on, you'll find you'll have greater success.
Does rooting hormone help?
Yeah, so basically I use rooting hormone in every single plant I propagate, whether it would be something that would propagate without it. But I find with hormone you actually get earlier roots, you get bigger roots, and you get more roots.
And just ordinary old rooting hormone you'd buy from a garden centre?
Yeah, so it's the plant hormone is known as an auxin. It's an indole butyric acid, which is an analogue of the natural occurring hormone in the plant, the natural occurring auxin. If people don't want to use hormones, you can use things like honey, which is an antibacterial, so it helps the wound close and then the roots to form.
Manuka honey, of course.
Yeah, of course, John. but even if you don't want to use hormone, you can still propagate plants. Actually, managing their environment is the key. You can take the perfect cutting, give it hormone, but if you don't give it the right environment, you're due to fail.
All right. How about that, Sonia?
Yeah, thanks very much, Sonia. Jan is at Klemzig with a ponytail plant question. Hi, Jan.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thanks.
So,
my question is, my ponytail is about 30 years old. I've had it in the pot that's been going really well, and it's just flowered. It's got these two really long stems, about 2 foot high, but on the trunk, the ones that have actually sprouted, they're like pups or shoots, are about 3 or 4 inches long, and there's about 6 others that look as though they're going to shoot too. How can I cut them off and make another plant with them?
Yeah, so with ponytail, there's two ways of propagating. It's either by the seed, which you've actually said your plant's flowering, so if it produces seed, you can do that, or you can propagate it by the pups, which you've actually described on your plant. So if you remove those pups, you can actually start new plants from it. So with taking pups, if there's any roots with that pup, it's actually quite good to be able to take that off. But sometimes when you pull the pup off, the roots aren't with it. But if you actually can get some roots with it, that's actually a good sign that pup will survive.
Cut it off with a sharp knife?
I'll put it, if it's not too big, I'll just sort of manoeuvre it with your finger, because then you can actually feel if there's a root system or not with it.
Would you take a chunk of the mother plant with the cutting?
I would try and do that, John, yes. So try and get as much of the plant as possible. If it has a bit of the trunk, a bit of the roots, that would be the best way of succeeding with the pup. But even if it doesn't have roots, I would still give it a go.
And what kind of mix?
What kind of mix would you put? 3 or 4 inches long, so that I can do it now, or should I try with the other ones that are like little teeny, not even as big as your fingernail?
So I'd probably like the ones that are about the large ones which you said, I'd go with those at the moment. The ones that are a little bit smaller, I'd wait for a while because they may be, produce some roots as well. So the ones that you that are, have got a bit of size at the moment, I'd go with those first, and then the smaller ones, I'd let them develop a bit more on the plant.
Oh, great. All right, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Jan, for the call. Now, Rupak's wondering what he's done wrong with his hydrangea. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you all?
Good morning.
Wonderful. Now, my question to Matt is, I'd taken some hydrangea cuttings last year around this time, and I'd put them in the media with the rooting hormone. And what happened was, after a few weeks, I started getting green shoots. So I was happy that, you know, they were turning a success. And then they just wilted with some bit of fungus on them. Now, I'm not really sure what things, you know, what things I should watch out this time around when I do it again.
So one of the classic things with hydrangea is when people take cuttings, they notice that the shoots come and then they actually assume that there's roots as well. Hydrangeas are notorious for having a lot of carbohydrates in the stem. And when they grow leaves, it's actually just from the reserved carbohydrates rather than the roots. And people, you know, then pull them out and they've got no roots on them. So with hydrangeas, you can do them two ways. You can actually do them as a hardwood cutting in winter with no leaves, or you can do them with this time of year with the leaves on. This time of year, you will need to control their environment with humidity. But if you do them in winter, you can just basically take sticks and put them outside and just let them go through winter, and then summer they should come through. But just be careful. Just because you've got shoots doesn't necessarily mean they've got roots on them.
If you get a little bit of powdery on the leaves, what to do?
Yeah, so hydrangeas are very susceptible to powdery mildew. So I know, John, you've spoken in the past about the milk sprays that have been quite good as a preventative or at the early stage. But because hydrangeas tend to lose their leaves, I wouldn't worry too much about it. I mean, you could use the milk solution or just let them go through winter and then the leaves will go and then you can start fresh again.
Right. And what would be a good way to test if the roots have come?
Just okay. So what you do, with your hands, you just give the stem a bit of a tug. And if you feel resistance, that would be from the roots, but if it just comes straight out without much resistance, you know the cutting hasn't got any roots on it.
You can still put it back?
Yeah, so I always always pulling plants out of pots all the time, looking at the root systems. So, if you use that propagation media which I spoke about, you'll find that the plant will come out of the media quite nice without actually damaging the root system.
All right, and before we go on to the next question, Deb, maybe just repeating that mixture, that's very, very important. Perlite, which you can buy from a garden centre, what's the mixture that goes with it?
So the two materials we use are perlite, which is 80%, of the mix, and the other 20% is the coir peat, so which is a substitute for peat moss, which is basically is the water holding material in the media. So perlite gives you aeration, coir gives you water holding.
Should you put seaweed extract or something like that when you're mixing it up, or should you stay away from all the things that you can add until the plants have actually got roots?
I tend to wait till plants have got roots, so we don't add any fertiliser or anything at that stage. But once the plants have got roots, then you can start adding your seaweed extracts and fertiliser and things like that. But until the plants have got roots, they can't really utilise it.
Thank you for the call, Rupak. Karen, from Allgate wants to talk about camellias. Welcome, Karen.
Good morning. Matt, obviously camellias have finished flowering, time to take some cuttings. And I was about to do that, and I've been told by some people that it needs bottom heat. Is that true?
So the beauty of this time of year is we actually got quite warm weather. So if you do have bottom heat, obviously that does help, but if you don't have bottom heat, you can still successfully do it this time of year. If you were going to be doing those cuttings in winter, then definitely you would need the bottom heat. Just to give you an idea, even in summer, we have bottom heat all year round. Basically, the thing is, it's not the actual temperature, it's the differentials in the temperature. So if you're getting quite warm days but cold nights, the bottom heat will actually just help with the temperature dropping at night time. But even if you don't have bottom heat, it's quite a good time of the year to be doing cuttings. I've got to do some camellia cuttings in the nursery at the moment, and I just went and inspected some trees the other day, and the cutting material looks perfect. It's all that new growth that's actually hardened off, and the new growth bud's just sitting there ready to go. So the material is pretty much at the perfect time to be doing camellia cuttings.
Perfect. And I'd like to put some vermiculite through my potting media that I'm going to use. So that's good. It's still going to be, it won't hold it too moist.
No, so just to clarify that, it's people get this mixed up. Perlite and vermiculite are actually quite different materials.
Absolutely.
So perlite gives you aeration, where vermiculite is more closely related to the coir, which will actually hold moisture. So if you wanted to use the vermiculite, you could do a perlite-vermiculite mix. But just be aware that the vermiculite actually holds moisture. And with camellia cuttings, you want good aeration because they will take quite a long time to strike. They could take anywhere 3 to 4 months compared to, say, like a salvia or a plectranthus, which may take 3 to 4 weeks.
Is perlite better than coarse sand?
I wouldn't say better. I prefer it because it's a sterile product when you actually receive it. With sand, you don't know what you're getting. Sometimes you can get some really good coarse sand, and other times you can get fine sand. Basically, sand and perlite do the same thing, but I find with propagation, after a while, if there's a lot of moisture there, the material gets really quite heavy.
Yes.
So, and you know what, perlite's a very light mix. So you can still use sand, but I just prefer not to use it.
Thanks, Karen, for your call. Ian from Beaumont is next on fig cuttings. Hello, Ian. Ian, are you there? No, Ian's left us. Let's go to Anne from Second Valley. Anne wants to talk about Vietnamese mint. Hi, Anne.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Just wondered what the best way of propagating Vietnamese mint is, please. John mentioned at the start of the program putting a cutting in a glass of water and getting the roots, which you seem to be able to do easily with Vietnamese mint. But then what would be the next step? What's the best propagation media, please?
So Vietnamese mint's really easy to propagate. So as you said, you can propagate it just in water, or you can propagate it in propagation media. Once you've actually got roots on the plant, then we wouldn't be using the propagation media. We'd just be using a potting mix, which you can purchase from your nursery. But obviously you want to pick the best quality potting mix possible. Vietnamese mint's probably one of the easiest plants to propagate. It's not difficult. But you can either, as I said, you can either do it just in the water, or you can do it in your in your propagation media, and then you can pot it up into a larger pot. But yeah, you should have quite good success with it.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Anne. Anne Marie from Renmark is next. Hello, Anne Marie.
Oh, hello. How are you? In the past, I've done cuttings of non-natives, but this year I want to take some Eremophila and Grevillea cuttings. In the past, I've done cuttings in February because we've got a very hot climate, and I've created my own little mini glass house with freezer bags, like new freezer bags, water the plants and then stick the freezer bag over the top. And I'm just wondering if that's going to work with my Eremophilas.
So when we've talked about humidity control, we've sort of more probably relating to exotics. So when we're talking natives, particularly things like Eremophilas, which come from dry, arid environments, you just have to be a little bit careful with elevated humidity, because they can rot off quite easily. With Eremophilas, there are some Eremophilas that are very easy to propagate, and then some that are very difficult. So the ones that come from a more dry, arid environment really don't like humidity at all. So putting the bag over them, you just have to keep an eye on it. I would do that initially, but I wouldn't leave the bags on them for too long, because the humidity could get to a level which the plant may not like.
Okay, thank you. And what about the mixture that you would use with the natives?
So I would still use that propagation media of 80%, 20%, so 80% perlite to 20% coir. I use that for pretty much every plant that I propagate, so it's a good material just to help that root initiation to happen. Then from there you can go to specialised potting medias.
Yep, okay, thank you.
Thank you, Anne-Marie. And Ian from Beaumont will make our last caller to speak about propagation with Matt Coulter, head propagator at the Adelaide Botanic Gardens. Hello, Ian.
Good morning. Just a question about propagating fig trees from cuttings.
So are we talking the fig that you eat? You can either do them as a hybrid cutting in winter with no leaves, or you could do them this time of year with the leaves on. So if you do them this time of year with the leaves on, obviously you need to control the humidity until the plants have got roots. But if you feel that's a bit more difficult for you to do, then if you do them in winter with hardwood cuttings, you really don't need bottom heat or misting or fogging systems. You just do them like just did the sticks, and then in spring the shoots come away. But if you wanted to have a go at them this time of year, obviously our figs have quite large leaves, so you have to reduce those leaves down. But they can be done quite successfully as green cuttings or as hardwood cuttings.
Good. Okay. Thank you for that.
Before we leave the issue of cuttings, and I notice that we're being inundated with lots more questions, and so that'll introduce the courses that you run. But before we do that, the other issue of people that take cuttings, put them in a glass of water, and lots of roots grow, and then the problem falls apart when they take the cutting out of the water and try and put it into a potting mix. What goes wrong, and what do they need to get it right?
So any time that we're trying to do something, we're trying to lessen the stress of the plant. So if you put some cuttings in water and they get roots, what a lot of people tend to do is let those roots grow and become quite huge. And then when you actually take them out of the water, they actually stress out quite considerably. Anything that roots in water will obviously root in propagation media quite successfully. If you wanted to go down the route of propagating things in water, my suggestion would actually remove them as soon as those first root initials happen.
Don't let them grow too long.
Because if you let the roots grow too long, the bigger the roots, the greater the stress.
Yeah, and the more likely they'll be tangled and actually you damage them.
And particularly if those plants have put new growth on, so you'll find as soon as you pull them out of the water, that new growth will wilt straight away, and then the plant will go under a bit of stress.
So how do you reduce the likelihood of them wilting?
The main thing is actually to get them out of the water as soon as possible.
So you put them in the cutting, but you've got them, you potted them up into your perlite and cocoa mix, and you've got them in a small container. Where would you locate them, and what kind of environment would you have around them until they get going themselves?
So basically, you want to just gradually start to harden them off. So you wouldn't go, say, from water straight out into the full sun. You may keep them inside for a week. Then you might put them into the shade for a week, and then gradually just harden them off. And then eventually you can go out into the full sun. Mm. But if you went from the water then straight out to the full sun, the likelihood of that cutting dying would be quite high. So it's just a gradual hardening off of the cutting.
Yeah, I stick them into a little plastic container, a little plastic storage containers. You buy them, 20 centimetres high and wide type of stuff. Put your cuttings in that, put the lid on, put them in a shady position for the first week. And that just allows the roots to take hold and off they go.
It's a great idea, John. Yeah, fantastic.
So I think we better leave propagation because there are so many other issues. And it's important we talk about the courses. The Botanic Gardens is just a wonderful resource of going and looking and seeing, but it's also learning. And Matt, you are very, very generous with your time and in running courses, and not just your courses, there are other courses. So first of all, there are master classes and then there are short courses. Just very quickly, what's the difference?
So a short course is just a short, more lecture type course which runs for 2 hours. We did that at this time of year in February, and it's held in the Adelaide Botanic Gardens, where the master classes, we go into a lot more depth, a lot more practical. It's a 5-hour course. So if people don't really want to sign up to doing something for 5 hours, the short course, which we do for 2 hours, is a great introduction. We're sort of aiming at people who are just starting off in gardening. So we do propagation, we do pests and diseases, we do garden design in the short courses. But if people want to get their hands into it and do a lot more practical work, that's what the master classes are aimed at.
All right. Are you running any short courses?
Yeah, so the short courses are running at the moment. So in February, and we've got a whole range of courses there. Some of them have been sold out, but there are some available still.
So you've got a book, obviously.
Yes, yes. They're on the internet on our website. If you go to our website under the education part, you'll see the courses there.
All right. And when do the master classes start?
So we start them at the end of March, and then we go through to about September.
Righto, and just some of the type of issues there.
So we have, obviously we have two types of propagation. We have the introductory propagation where we do cuttings and seed sowing and seed storing. And then we have an advanced course where we actually do leaf cuttings, root cuttings, grafting and budding.
And apart from that, there's the landscaping and bonsai and so rhododendrons.
Yep, exactly. Okay. We do bonsai, we do orchids, we do walk through the gardens with curators, a whole range of different courses.
All right, and we can highlight those in the Good Gardening newsletter and obviously on Talkback Gardening. But the important thing is if you go onto the Botanic Gardens website, that information is all there.
That's correct, John. We've been running these courses for, this is about our 7th year now, so we've been doing it for quite some time now. So, yeah, they're good fun.
Matt Coulter, I appreciate you giving up your Saturday morning to come in and talk gardening, but I think you like talking gardening, don't you?
Yeah, I just love plants, particularly propagation. I don't find, I know it's the most satisfying thing, and yeah, I'm just as you can tell, I just love plants.
Well, we love having you in, Matt Coulter, so thank you very much. We appreciate it a lot. Matt Coulter, head propagator at the Adelaide Botanic Gardens. Well, I've got 2 3-part prize packs, an ABC Organic Gardener, latest magazine, 2020 calendar and 2020 gardener's diary, perfect for propagators to make their notes in. But it's a 3-part question. So the first of these prize packs is going by phone. The number is 1-300-222-891. The three questions are this. Where is the latest fruit fly outbreak in Adelaide? When was it declared? The month will do. And was it Mediterranean or Queensland fruit fly? The questions again. Which suburb is the latest fruit fly outbreak? What month was it declared? And is it Mediterranean or Queensland fruit fly? Call now, 1-300-222-891.
Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe.
Call 1-300-222-891.
Our prize pack competition for the ABC Organic Gardener prize pack. 3-part question. Where is the latest fruit fly outbreak? When was it declared? And is it Mediterranean or Queensland fruit fly? We'll find out the winner in just a moment. But we'll head back to our general talk about gardening calls. Peter from Cromer is up first. Hi, Peter.
Hello. Thanks very much for letting me in so quickly. I've been gardening a long time. It's embarrassing how long. And this year I'm having symptoms with my tomatoes of all things that I've not experienced previously. The leaves are going brown all the way up from the doing trim bottom ones. Brown, and then they're crinkling in on themselves, and the stems look as if they've been painted with a weak tea solution, very light tan. Any ideas what's going on there, please, John?
Sounds quite strange there, Peter.
Yes.
The browning, is it on the new growth or the old growth?
No, it's still producing fresh green new growth right at the tip.
Yes.
But the old growth, all the way down basically to ground level, browns slowly, it goes through tan to brown,
yes.
And then it withers and dies right back.
How are you watering your plants?
I water them from below. I'm very, very challenged for water, so I've got a micro irrigation system. Well,
okay.
I call it micro, but I've got small miniature sprinklers about a foot above ground level, and they are lower than the lowest growth on the plants.
Righto. So could it be that you're getting splash from the soil onto the plants? From your micro?
No.
No? Okay,
no,
I need to ask. There are a number of things that cause leaves to go brown. One of the most likely are fungal diseases, which are soil-borne, and when you use a sprinkler or something that's got a reasonable jet on it, it splashes the little spores onto the lower leaves, and the lower leaves, then when we get rain or showers, and you don't need much in the way of showers, it splashes up to the next layer of leaves, and so it goes brown from the bottom up. And from your description, that's what it sounds like. But if you're not using a watering system, we haven't had the rain or the showers to cause problems. I'm a bit of a loss to know. It sounds very much like it's fungal. I would strongly suggest that you spray it with a fungicide. And the best thing would be using a wettable sulfur. In weather like this, it would be absolutely ideal. Don't use it when the temperatures are over 32 degrees. But a thorough spray with wettable sulfur, if it's a fungal disease, it won't stop what you've got. But if you've got in the future, as soon as you see that occurring, put on a fungicide like a wettable sulfur. You could also use copper sulfate, but I would suggest the sulfur is more effective and more appropriate at this time of the year.
All right, well, I'll take that on board, thank you. Just an associated question. I've planted this row of tomatoes this year only about a half a metre from the edge of where I grew potatoes last year, and I know lots of things don't like growing proximity to potatoes. Do you think there's any concern that there may be some cross-contamination from residue of the potato crop, John?
Potatoes usually have different diseases to tomatoes, but when you dig them up, take a good look at the roots and just make sure you haven't got any root lot nematodes, little lumps on the roots. And if you do, make sure you either use a resistant variety or change where you're growing them. But I don't think that's your problem. It could be it's viral, but it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like it's either bacterial or fungal, and that's where I think probably your sulfur is your best bet.
Thanks very much for the call, Peter. Now, congratulations go to Brad from Seacombe Heights.
Good on you,
who
Brad.
Who got all three questions right for our very first ABC Organic Gardener prize pack. The questions were, where is the latest fruit fly outbreak?
Which is Blair Athol and around Prospect and Broadview and all those areas around there.
When was it declared?
That was last December. But the important thing is that the fruit is falling on the ground, and so there's a potential of fruit fly spreading. That's why we're talking fruit fly.
It is, and so make sure you get that fruit off the ground. And the final question was it Mediterranean or Queensland fruit fly that was found?
Definitely Mediterranean, in from Western Australia. Somebody's brought it in and haven't been very, very diligent.
Okay, so good work, Brad, getting all of those right. We'll have another prize pack up for grabs before 10 o'clock via the text line. So make a note of the text number. It's 0467 922 891. We'll have another question for you shortly. Let's go to Valley View now. John has a question about his wisteria tree. Hi, John.
Good morning, Deb. Good morning, John. I had a retaining wall put in recently, and the contractor's excavator disturbed what had once been a wisteria, which had been cut off and we were able to manage. It pulled out the main stump, but the thing is just suckering like mad now all over the place. And I just wonder what I can do to finally kill it off.
You want to destroy it?
Yes.
Righto. Well, I think if you use one of the blackberry materials, blackberry sprays, the active ingredient is triclopore. And
right.
I would suggest that you look at the areas which are growing, still got green on them, and have your triclopore mixed up with the kerosene or according to the directions, and have a paintbrush standing by. You cut the stems that are still alive and you paint those immediately with the material that you've prepared, and within 2 or 3 weeks you'll find it'll work its way back into the root system and got rid of your wisteria.
The stems that are coming up are only very, very thin, tiny little things coming up out of the ground. Should I wait for them to mature?
Yes, I'd be waiting. Wait until probably end of February, March. You get some reasonable growth then, and I think you probably, I mean, if there's nothing else around it, I'd probably I've got a little sprayer which is specifically for weedicides, and I don't use it for anything else but weedicides, and something like that, I'd actually spray it onto the foliage and onto the soft cuttings, and that should be quite effective.
Okay, we'll give it a go and see what happens.
Thank you, John. The call. Ed is in West Lakes and he's had some collapsed woolly bushes. What's happened, Ed?
Good morning, Deb. Hello, John. I've got 6 woolly bushes planted along a colourbond fence line on the western side of our block. And some of them have grown to just over a metre high. And shaped beautifully like Christmas trees. But after the weather earlier this week, we noticed that they're now wild and woolly, most of them, in that they've totally lost their shape and sort of imploding from the centre. And the some of the branches are now slightly lighter green. They're still soft to touch, but I was wondering, I've got a major problem on that.
Yeah, woolly bushes can be a little bit temperamental, and you'll get the stage where they're just looking lovely, and then usually one in the middle of a row decides to turn up its toes and you've got a great big gap. And that's usually associated with watering. They don't like to be overwatered, particularly during warm weather. You get warm weather and moisture in the root system, and it sets up some kind of a system that upsets the roots and it bowls the plant over. where they're going gangbusters and out of shape, it's important that you have as much leaf area on the canopy as possible at this time of the year, because I think February we're going to get some pretty hot weather. But having said that, the best thing you can do right now is go over the long branches, any long branches, take the tips out. Take the tip growth out. That stops them from elongating and getting more gangly. But in the, it will also encourage the plant to send more side branches out. But don't. But then once the hot weather has gone, probably maybe mid-March would be a time to get out with your secateurs and shape up the tree so that if you do it then, it's got time to produce new growth before winter.
Yeah. So the branches that are now sort of almost pointing to the ground, do I just still just tip prune those?
Yeah, take the tips. Don't take too much out. Just take the tips out, and that's it's reorganizing the hormones, and we won't go into a hormone story again. But if you take out the tips, that upsets the hormones and redistributes the growth, but it stops them from getting longer and losing more of their shape.
Excellent. Thanks so much indeed, John.
Thank you very much for the call, Ed. I've got another prize pack of the ABC Organic Gardener magazine to give away. That is the latest magazine, the 2020 calendar and the diary. This time it's by SMS, the text line 0467922891. We need your full name and postal address. Two questions this time instead of three. The first is, how do you tell the difference between a caterpillar and a fruit fly larva? Now, this one comes from you, John, so I'm hanging it on you.
That's all right.
It's relatively simple.
Well, it's important because, yeah, that's right. You look there and say, oh, yuck, it's got a grub in it. But is it a fruit fly or a caterpillar?
Yeah, so how do you tell the difference? And what is the fruit fly hotline number? Text now 0467 922891.
Talk Back Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Our text competition number is 0467922891. The questions: how do you tell the difference between a caterpillar and a fruit fly larva? And what is the fruit fly hotline number? Send it through with your full name and postal address. We'll announce the winner, hopefully, before 10 o'clock this morning. Let's go now to Netchley. Brian wants to talk about fruit, or no fruit, I should say, on his cherry and avocado trees. That's not good, Brian.
No. It's been happening for 3 or 4 years now.
So, tell me a bit of the background, if you wouldn't mind. Thanks, Brian.
Yeah, well, I'm over by the east side of the airport, sandy soil there. I've got a Hass avocado. It's probably about 4 or 5 metres high. But every time we get the hot weather comes along, the fruit, the size of marbles, or large marbles, but then they all drop off.
And, righto. Well, so you're obviously getting flowers for
heaps of flowers, and we get maybe 150 type little fruits we end up getting out of it.
Yes,
but once that first hot weather comes along, 100 degrees or more or above, the fruit just all starts dropping off.
Righto. Well, two factors. One is pollination. And if you've got, is it a proper variety you've got or a seedling?
We seed out of a fruit we had.
Okay, well, I think that's probably half the problem. You don't know the variety, and it may be it's a Hass one.
Hass,
okay,
yeah.
Righto. Well, it should have the potential of setting fruit, and it's flowering. If you don't get good pollination, it would be better if you had a mate that was growing close by. You get cross pollination.
Yes. Well, but we're getting 150 fruit on it, John.
So it has fruited in the past.
Yeah, well, years ago, we the first year and that, we got 6, and then we got 5, and then the last 3 years, we've been getting, maybe 150 baby fruits on it.
We're going to run out of time,
right.
So I need to sort of speed things up, if you don't mind.
Yes.
What happens at fruit set time is vital. And so it goes back to the previous autumn, we're talking about spring now, but in autumn it's important that you have good nutrition then, putting on a balanced fertiliser with trace elements. And the trace elements are particularly important in getting fruit set in the following spring. Then in the springtime, as the trees are starting to flower, they're producing their flowers, it's critical that the root system doesn't dry out. You're in sandy soil, and I suspect it's important that you have a nice mulch, and probably on a weekly basis you make sure that you've got that top 30 centimetres of soil moist. If you haven't, you'll get fruit drop, particularly on sandy soil. And if you can keep the roots moist, you've got more likelihood of getting a problem. The other area which we talked about earlier on in the program, if you're putting on too much fertilizer, too much water, you get too much growth. You get the flowers, but you don't get the fruit set. So just in case, early in spring, put on some sulfate of potash. Don't put on too much, though. Read the directions and put on what they recommend for a fruit tree. And if you put on some sulphur of potash, then you've got all the things that I can think of to help get you from flowers to get the fruit staying on.
Brian, good luck doing all of those things. And congratulations to our SMS prize pack winner, Julie from Glen Osmond. The questions were, how do you tell the difference between a caterpillar and a fruit fly larva?
Aha, a caterpillar has legs, a fruit fly doesn't. It just wriggles.
Aha, and Julie knew that one. And what is the fruit fly hotline number? Julie got that one right as well, but do you want to tell us what it is, John?
It's 1-300-666-010.
1-300-666-010, a good one to have by your phone if you are a keen fruit gardener. Well, John, it's hard to believe, but we've come to an end already. John Lamb, another busy week on Talkback Gardening. Back into it next week. Hard to believe it's going to be February.
Yes.
Which means Darren Ray will be joining us.
Also, another guest will be talking fruits, figs in containers with Joe from Joe's Connected Garden.
I love having Joe in. Well, thank you very much, John, and we'll see you next month.
Until then, good gardening.